Subcommittee on Health Policy to order. And I'd like to start off with a public hearing. Actually, before I go there, we had on the schedule today House Bill 3087. We will not be hearing that bill today, working out at all. So if you're here for 3087, that's about informed consent, we won't be hearing that one. Just wanted to let you know. And let's open a public hearing on 2716. Representative Butler, would you like to start us off? Actually, Rick, can you give us a brief description?
Very briefly, thank you, Chair. This bill does require the Oregon Board of Nursing to issue a license, nursing license to an applicant who holds an active unrestricted license in either Washington, Idaho, Nevada, or California, meets other statutory provision and pays appropriate fees, and then it also requires issue a provisional nursing license to persons who hold a full unrestricted license in any other state and has not been been professionally sanctioned. And then it also establishes that provisional license is valid until the board approves or denies the regular license. That's a very brief overview, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. And with us today we have Chief Sponsor, Representative Butler. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Chair Kotek. Tom Butler from House District 60 in Ontario, and I have with me today Lee Jackson from the Holy Rosary Medical Center in Ontario, as well as Ed Patterson, representative of the Rural Hospital Association. House Bill 2716 is brought to you out of some concern which we have living on the Oregon border with Idaho, with a hugely growing population in the state of Idaho, where we do not have many of the perhaps the tort issues that are facing professionals the way we do in Oregon. But more than that, it's the tremendous amount of demand that there is in the nursing fields. And what this bill does, as your committee administrator has ably indicated to you, it would be to encourage the board of the state board of nursing to assist with reciprocal licenses so that truly we had reciprocity amongst the states, that our Oregon nurses, Treasure Valley Community College is graduating nurses as well, that our Oregon nurses could practice along the border in a seamless fashion the same way as we could with the Idaho nurses. When it was my privilege and pleasure to be a county commissioner in Mount Hare County, one of the things which we did was we took a group of county employees and moved them into a very good lateral move to allow them to take our mental health services and ply their talents on both sides of the borders. And actually that has created now for Oregon, Eastern Oregon, one of the largest non-profit mental health providers in all of Eastern Oregon, as a result of the fact that we kind of erased the borders when we were able to do that. But we also recognize that in the licensure process that we would like to erase the border somewhat with Idaho, and we would hope to have the same opportunity with Washington, where reciprocal licenses can be available for our nurses and have their nurses reciprocally come across the lines. And after all, it is a river, it's not a wall. And finally, I would just say this, that we do have some unique situations in Mount Hare County with the state's largest penitentiary located in rural Mount Hare County, and recognize that while the population of the inmate population is something in the vicinity of 3,000, that's a 24/7 population, so it really has a demand population of around 10,000 people that are living there, and those folks sometimes exhibit habits relative to their health that aren't all the best. They get into fights and scrapes and those kinds of things. And so we have quite a nursing demand in the prison system as well. And this would assist us in being able to bring nurses in and ply their talents. Again, both sides. It will help both Oregonians as well as it would help folks from out of state coming in and helping Oregonians as they come into state. So with that, I wanted to introduce Lee Jackson from the Holy Rosary Medical Center in Ontario.
Thank you, Chairperson Kotek and committee members. Sorry. I'm Lee Jackson. I'm Vice President of Patient Care Services, Holy Rosary Medical Center. I serve in that capacity as Chief Nurse Officer in Ontario, Oregon. We at Holy Rosary Medical Center support this bill as an effective measure to assist in the recruitment and placement of registered nurses in the Oregon healthcare workforce. We are sit on the border, as Senator Butler or Representative Butler had said, and we have specific challenges in our rural setting of recruitment, retention, and replacement of registered nurses. The licensure system in the state must be responsive to the healthcare organizations to help them to place nurses quicker to allow them to be available for patient care. This bill provides a umbrella of protection. It fits right into the State Practice Act with more flexibility to allow reciprocal licensure and provisional licensure, which is important as we have folks from outside of the three states mentioned in the bill to the other 50 states, which if a nurse has an unencumbered license, oftentimes there's a significant delay in getting them on board. We've experienced that ourselves. Today's healthcare system, we're stretched, we're doing more with less people, with less money, all those type of things. And anytime we have delays in recruitment or placement of nurses staff, we have additional costs which directly impact how we're able to provide care. The process of nurse shortage and being unable to provide bed space because you cannot field nurses into shifts is a significant impact on our ability to provide care to our communities, especially in the rural setting. This past winter, we had an experience where we made a choice to use traveler nurses. These are nurses which actually were coming from the Northwest. Actually, one was coming from who was originally licensed in Washington and has a Oregon license that was not active. This nurse was one of the four that we were bringing on to help us to staff during a time of unseasonal high census. That nurse waited 5 weeks. That meant we were unable to staff another position for 5 weeks for her license to be cleared. This is after all the paperwork got to the state. It was an additional 5 weeks. That, it, to us, is an unusually long time for somebody who has a license, is practicing and has licenses in other states, that is unencumbered, that we should have the ability to bring those folks on in a much more timely fashion to address some of our staffing needs. At Holy Rosary, we staff, to give you the perspective of what this means, is we staff two units, a total of 28 beds of medical, surgical, and pediatric patients. Since last July, due to turnover, which our turnover at Holy Rosary has ranged anywhere from 10 to 21%, this year we're running at 19% this fiscal year since last July. We were unable to field a full complement of nursing staff on the floor. That means we staff both units with two RNs and three assistive or LPN positions. We were at times down to two nurses and having to close one of the units to be able to admit patients and take care for them safely. That means at times we're cutting our ability to place patients in half. And this ended up with having patients placed in our ICU, which stressed our ICU staff beyond their ability to care for safely with the critical nature of some of our patients. But in addition, it ended up with as many as six patients spending time of anywhere from 2 to 3 hours up to 18 to 24 hours in the emergency room waiting for a bed to be available or for staffing to be available. This really is an important issue for our hospital and many other rural hospitals to have the ability to quickly bring on traveler nurses who may not have an Oregon license but have an unencumbered license or maybe even be licensed in two or three other states where they have traveled to, and to be able to do that effectively. The rural health. Currently, we have 15 vacancies at our hospital. We're filling 13 of those with new graduates from our community college, which Holy Rosary has stepped up, and we sponsored two instructorships at that college so we could expand the number of nurses graduating. This year there are 26. We are taking half of them as scholarship recipients. This is a tremendous commitment to our community. We want the state to help to assist us in being able to meet the needs of the orientation and that, because bringing on 13 people in a small hospital, it takes several months to get them up to speed where they can accurately take care of patients safely and effectively. We will continue to use travelers and other support staff to be able to do that. This bill would allow us to bring folks on in a more timely fashion as folks who are current travelers make choices to move on, or that we have further changes in positions by nurses leaving our organization to go to the larger practice settings of Boise, which is only 50 miles away. We have a significant draw there. People go to those locations, and so we need to be able to have a timely process to bring folks back in. The State Board of Nursing also indicated that, you know, their ability to endorse licensure is 21 days. My experience was about 21 days when I was endorsed and reactivated my license to come to work at Holy Rosary 9 months ago, and it was about 21 days. There are some that are 40 days, as they say. I was talking with a nurse just this morning, and she waited 5 weeks, and she's been a 30-year nurse in the state of Washington working in home health, and she, since they now have clients and coming across the border into home health area, she waited 5 weeks to get her license. And she said, you know, it just seemed unusually long for somebody who has had a sterling record for 30 years. I feel this bill allows enough latitude for the state board to endorse licenses, give provisional licenses, and to do the background checks as we go about bringing these staff on board. The board did talk about in one of their comments that I was reviewed in the last couple of days that there is a section 678.31 and 678.034 that gives hospitals emergency ability to bring staff in without licensing them with the state. From my reading of that, it is not as clear as it may be implied. It is not giving latitude to general nursing units. It talks about critical care and emergency rooms. Critical care and emergency rooms have not been our problem. It's been our traditional medical surgical units. And I feel that this bill would be a good step into addressing that issue. Yes, there are emergencies. The state says it has been used 21 times. We have not used it. Actually, being new to the organization, I asked our HR representative and the other lead administrative team and asked if they knew that that was even in the law. And they were unaware of it. But there is no way of knowing how do you declare emergency or what is the issue. So I feel that the Nurse Practice Act is good. This would make it better. It provides a latitude to bring in nurses into our state, bring nurses back through endorsement of Oregon nurses who have left, and it continues to provide the protections of the umbrella of the law for our patient care recipients. Thank you, and I'll answer questions if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. I do have a clarifying question.
Yes.
You made reference several times, and thank you for and traveling all this way. We really appreciate that. Traveling nurses, are they, how do you define that?
Just traveling nurses are temporary agency nurses which are hired from either local or national companies. There are several national companies currently which place nurses across the country. This is an area where, since the nursing shortage truly started back in the mid-90s, has been growing and bringing in international nurses and various different types of nurses into the U.S., as well as nurses that go and want to see different places and that type of thing. So they sign on or join an organization that places nurses across the country.
And they're usually relatively short-term.
Normally, the minimum contracts that we've signed have been 8 weeks, and they can be as long as 26 or even, I've seen some as long as 52 weeks where they do sign on for a full year. If you do have some international nurses who come in, oftentimes that's a 1 to 2 year commitment in that organization for an international placement.
Interesting. Well, if they like the place they're going, I mean,
yes.
Here's a good stay. Thank you. Questions? Representative Bonamici?
Quick question. Thank you, Representative Kotek. Welcome.
Thank you.
Mr. Jackson. I have a question about whether the states that are listed in the bill, Washington, Idaho, Nevada, or California, have the same or equivalent educational requirements for nurses.
Yes, the basic entry into nursing is the ADN. You can come in with an ADN or a BSN. The educational format of the ADN program is more a technical or support. The BSN is looking at more with leadership and expanded into community health. The licensure board that they take is the same across all 50 states. Each board... many years ago, across the United States, the Association of State Board of Nursing standardized the test, and it is the same across. So they are tested the same. States from state to state may have some variation in the requirements for the nursing program, but each state board of nursing approves the content and the those schools of nursing.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Bruno.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Welcome to the Pacific Standard Time Zone, by the way.
Yes, thank you. I didn't change my mind.
Actually, Pacific Daylight.
Pacific Daylight, yeah. I wanted to ask you about, in your specific example regarding Holy Rosary, what you were seeing with the average age of your staff. And then you mentioned that you were sort of changing the how you operate, and you had this partnership with the community college.
Yes.
So it sounded like a significant portion of your staff now is young. But I wanted you to address specifically with Holy Rosary what you're seeing, because obviously an issue that we've grappled with is the aging, nurse and doctor population, especially in the rural parts of the state. What you're seeing specifically at Holy Rosary, and what you're seeing in the wider Ontario community on the age of nurses.
Thank you, Representative Braun and committee members. What we're seeing is a dichotomy in age. We have many older nurses in our organization as well as younger nurses. Probably, if you looked across section, you would probably find the majority being between 40 and 50 years of age, which is probably fairly comparable to what the national standards are. The class of nurses that are coming in, probably, or the 13 that we're hiring, there are probably... six of those that are mid-career life changes that are probably around the 40-year or older category. The rest are probably somewhere between 25 and 35. As for our organization as a whole, I would say probably 20% of our nursing workforce, including our manager level, would probably be looking toward retirement within a five-year period of time. I have one.
Is that increasing? If I can cut in,
yes.
This is getting worse.
Yes.
I guess
yes.
I'm not trying to lead you, but is it?
No, it is getting worse. I'm in my mid-50s, and I've been doing this for a little over 30 years, and a lot of the folks that I came into nursing with have gone on to other things. It's just not the aging of the population that is, but some have gone into consulting, and so they're not working directly in acute care. We have actually, in this year, we'll probably have two of our senior nurses in leadership retire that have been at Holy Rosary, one 25 years, and in June she's retiring. This is after she graduated from school of nursing, received her license in 1963. So she is one of our, probably our senior statesmen our nursing workforce. But we do have quite a few that are in 40 latter 40s to mid 50 category that are there at the bedside.
Getting older. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ed Patterson. I'm the executive director for the Oregon Rural Health Association. I've held that position for about 3 years. Part of that, I spent 18 years lobbying for the hospital association, and before that, I spent 12 years as a small rural hospital administrator. And I can tell you it's panicky when we have more patients in a small, remote community than you have nurses to take care of. And we went through throes like that 20 years ago with me. And it's still a problem because you can't balance in a small hospital, small number of beds. You can't balance with the same number of patients day for day for day. It goes up and down. And it's the same way as trying to get professional staff to take care of those people. It's a much more difficult problem in smaller hospitals than it is in big ones. I say that from personal experience. My association endorses this bill. We think it's a small but a doable thing that can be done by the Board of Nursing if they're directed from a policy standpoint to create these new definitions. And it would be helpful for hospitals like Mr. Jackson's. So we support the bill.
Thank you. And I'll address this to any of you. Has the Board of Nursing considered prioritizing applications from border counties, rural counties, in a way that would facilitate this outside of doing something like this?
Chair Kotek, yes, thank you. That's an excellent question. And we did present a bill on behalf of rural medical practitioners, surgeons, and physicians to see if we couldn't prioritize the way that basically physicians are licensed in the state of Oregon. And in all fairness, the Board of Medical Examiners, number one, they were only meeting and considering those applications on a quarterly basis before we started to raise a stink. They're actually examining and reviewing all applications on a weekly basis now. And so that has accelerated it tremendously. Secondly, the chair of the board of, or the executive director of the Board of Medical Examiners has been most kind to say, okay, here's an application that wants to come to a rural hospital in rural Oregon, whether it's a coastal community or whether it's in southern or southeastern or somewhere in rural Oregon. And what they've done is they've said, okay, that application goes to the top of the pile, and then they process that application and get it started, and then start working on the other ones that are for the more metropolitan areas. So we have had, by their own motion, a significant acceleration of other licensure, and that's been most helpful. The concern that we've got is that Oregon, particularly along the border community, is a very, very difficult state to practice in when I've got such a tremendous magnet across the river. Bigger bonuses for doctors that are willing to come there, limited liability with regard to torts and those kinds of things. And unfortunately, I've got one of the largest employers in the city of Ontario in the Holy Rosary Medical Center that's been there since before the turn of the prior century in one form or another, that's now looking and saying, you know what, all of our doctors are coming, they're living in Idaho and coming over here, the majority of them. I only have just a handful of doctors that actually live in my community. And those that are getting a little more senior, when they're looking around for a nicer home, there's not a building lot in Ontario that they can actually go to typically. And so then they're looking at nice view lots over on the Snake River on the Idaho side. So I've got a whole different, unique situation with regard to the medical issues. And so we are trying to do what we can to attract more medical practitioners in the form of surgeons and physicians into Oregon, into these rural hospitals, and of course there is a rural hospital credit for them as well on their income taxes if they'll come to a medically distressed area. But what our desire now is to see if we can't get this reciprocal arrangement so that we can accelerate the nurses' licenses so that they can move to the top of the pile, or certainly with direction as this particular bill does in 2716 to say you will have reciprocal and you will do these other kinds of things to accommodate nurses that want to come to Oregon and that have clean records elsewhere. I mean, they've got a good history, unblemished record in another state, and to have that licensee wait for even 20 days is a long time. 20 days would be acceptable. The problem is when it stretches out to 3 weeks or 5 weeks, 35 days, and then longer. Then sometimes when they've got two opportunities to practice, one in Oregon and one in Washington, and they really wanted to come to the Northwest, they're looking at it and saying, well, I just go to Washington. They accepted that in my application 3 weeks ago.
Other questions? We did receive this afternoon some information. I don't know if you've seen this from the Board of Nursing. We can get you a copy. This is their comments on the bill. They were taking a neutral position. They just had comments on the language. And I haven't had a chance to review this, so we'll take a look at this.
And, Chair, I'm grateful to know that they've taken a neutral position on it.
I'm the only one who got this, so I have to share it with the committee. But, no, it says currently the Board of Nursing's position is neutral. However, they have several issues. But we'll take a look at this and give you a copy of it. This must have just come by fax today, I think. Any other comments or questions? Thank you for being
here. Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Thank
you for bringing the bill to our attention. Is there anyone else who wanted to testify on 2716? That was all I had on my list. All right, with that, I will get everyone copies of this if you haven't seen it. And with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2716. And now we'll have a work session on House Bill 2800. As you recall, we've had a couple work sessions on this. We do have... yes, Rick, please do. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. In your packet for 2800, you had the dash 2 amendments. Basically, what the dash 2s do to the bill is that it includes basically everything in the dash 1s that you had at your last meeting. It did make some changes that were raised after the committee raised questions and suggestions by the proponents of it. And then it basically defines distribution and prescribe and distribution to address the issue of prescribing psychologists who would give out samples. It does require that the prescribing psychologist have a 2-year post-licensure clinical experience in an inpatient, outpatient healthcare setting that provides some physical health services. I believe a question arose that the word health setting did not quite connote a physical health or medical setting, so that wording was added. It also modifies the committee on prescribing psychologists to include a physician who has experience in treating children with mental or emotional disorders versus just noting that it would have to be a pediatrician. This kind of broadens a little bit more and still includes kids. And does delete the wording that the board may issue a temporary certificate of prescriptive authority, and then changes the operative date to July 1/08 to provide more time for, again, the rulemaking and operation of the bill.
Okay, those are the dash ones we're talking about.
Those are the dash twos. Mm-hmm. So basically the dash twos and the things I described are just the additions or changes to the dash one.
Got it.
Other than that, it's pretty much the same bill.
Thank you, Rick. And just for the record, I did receive a letter from Dr. Lauren Pankratz, consultation psychologist, who wrote a letter in opposition to the bill, so I wanted to have it in the record. Colleagues, do you have any questions on the changes from the dash ones to the dash twos? If people just need a second to look them over, or I can go through and point out where those minor changes were if you'd like. Did we resolve the issue? Does this have a referral to Ways and Means?
This does still, I'm sure, have a referral to Ways and Means once it goes to the full.
Yeah,
Yes, Representative Elser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was unable to be here last week when we first discussed the Dash Ones, but I had raised a significant concern that I had was the prescription of psychotropic drugs to children, particularly children with mental illness, obviously, and those with other special needs, since we know that this is a very complicated issue. And I was very pleased to see added the kind of the ties, the sideboards that got added onto that, that is ensuring that the prescribing psychologist would be consulting initially with a psychiatrist before initial prescription and then continuing consultation following that. So I was greatly appreciative of that. I also wanted to share, if it's appropriate, I really felt torn on this issue because I'm very concerned about those that have great expertise in treating these children and the concerns that they raised, balanced with the real lack of access to psychiatric providers and appropriate medication for children with mental illness. And I talked with a woman who has a child with bipolar disorder who really struggles with his medication levels and other kinds of things, and asked her opinion on this issue, and I wanted to make sure that that was on the record. Her initial response was that they much preferred seeing their child psychologist as opposed to their child psychiatrist because they felt like she treated the whole child, she did behavioral types of things, and they got to see that person more often, and they didn't feel like their needs were as well met when they went to see the psychiatrist, and I think we heard testimony to that effect. Several minutes later, she reflected back on that and wondered if the demand for prescribing healthcare providers, which is so great, if an unintended consequence might not be that psychologists now might have less time for doing some more of those holistic types of treatments, because added to their responsibilities would be using the prescribing psychotropic drugs. So she came away kind of mixed on. She wanted to make sure that what wasn't lost was that holistic treatment of the child, the behavioral therapy, the attention to everything else that was happening in the family. That said, I appreciate the changes that are in the Dash 2 amendments and feel comfortable supporting the bill, and I do hope that attention will be paid. I think that a lot of the testimony that we heard had to do with that accessibility to psychologists, that holistic treatment, and it's my hope that if we do move forward to this, that there will be attention paid to the prescribing not taking over kind of within the practice and the treatment of the individual, or detract from the time and that holistic treatment of the individuals, whether they're children or adults. So thank you for indulging me.
No, thank you. And also at the top of page 6 on the Dash 2s, adding a physician with experience treating children on the advisory group. So I appreciate those comments. And I, my impression from conversations with the psychologist was they don't want this to become their whole practice. They want to have an extra item that they can use if they need it to the ones who are interested in doing this. I don't expect every psychologist in Oregon to run out and do this, but thank you for your comments. Other comments? Or I would also entertain a motion to move the Dash 2.
Madam Chair, I would.
Has a fiscal emergency?
No, but does have a referral to Ways and Means.
There isn't any estimate of a fiscal
emergency. Ms. Orman, did you want to make any comments about the fiscal?
You have to come up.
Chair Kotek, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Deborah Orman. I'm the executive director of the Board of Psychologist Examiners. Chair Kotek, in answer to your question, was there a fiscal effect statement submitted? The answer is yes.
And that was submitted to legislative fiscal? Or did?
Yes.
Legislative fiscal?
Yes.
Yes, Chair. Normally, legislative fiscal office will contact the agency or board requesting fiscal information. Doesn't necessarily mean that because of the onslaught of bills that we've gotten LFO's analysis of their fiscal. Basically, anything that has a Ways and Means referral at this point because of our end of April deadlines will, in essence, get probably a hall pass per the okay of LFO to send the bill down there. But we likely won't see an analysis.
I'm wondering what the magnitude of that fiscal was.
The
I assume it's more than a trivial fiscal.
Right. The first biennium, it was 200,000.
So it does. I was just checking whether it really needed the Ways and Means, and I assumed it would.
Yes,
primarily from the staff.
Checking in on that. Mm-hmm. That makes it easier.
And that's true. I haven't gotten any analysis back. I just gave it to them on Wednesday.
And be sure it won't be less than that.
Yes.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you. I didn't have a question. I had a comment since we're in work session. I, like Representative Gelser, have spent a lot of time thinking about this, listened to a lot of testimony, talked to a lot of people, read a lot of letters and emails, and I certainly acknowledge the concerns that have been raised about the lack of ability to get adequate health care, which we've heard again and again and again this session. But I continue to question whether this approach is going to resolve that issue for many reasons. I still think, and I applaud the work of everybody who's put so much time into all this negotiation, but I'm still uncertain that there's adequate supervision, that the medical education is sufficient for the complexity of the medical conditions and the psychotropic medication especially. There are existing programs that are already in existence, like the physician assistant program, I think works in essence sort of reinventing the wheel here. The having the oversight with the Board of Psychology Examiners, which is not something they've done, I'm uncertain about. I've had a lot of opposition from people with a lot more expertise in this area than I have. And one of the things that really concerns me is that a lot of the justification for this is that we need assistance in rural areas especially. But I'm even more concerned about that because there's less supervision. I did look at the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments with the child, especially a concern, and I look at so many layers that it just doesn't make sense to me. If there's still a consultation with a child psychiatrist and continuing consultations with the child psychiatrist, and to me it's just adding more layers that don't need to be there. So my concerns outweigh what I see as a potential benefit. And importantly, this bill doesn't require psychologists with prescription privileges to go to rural areas. So we're not really addressing what I saw was a primary reason for the bill. So I'm going to be a no.
Thank you, Representative. I'm also ready to have more discussion or entertain a motion. Actually, could we move the Dash 2s?
Yeah. Madam Chair, I'd move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2800.
Thank you, Representative. So now we have before us the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2800. Any discussion on the Dash 2s?
If I may.
Yes,
Representative. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I have a lot of the same, both Representative Gelser and Representative Bonamici aptly described the information that came at us on this bill, which was a ton, both pro and con. I have a lot of the same concerns that Representative Bonamici had, although I'm gonna err on the side, if you will, of doing this. I started trying to get my arms around the issue of mental health care and mental health care capacity in the state last session when this body took up the issue of mental health parity, and in that analysis and since then it has just opened my eyes, if you will, Madam Chair, to the degree at which we're lacking the ability to provide adequate health care across the state, not just in the rural areas, but in the urban areas and the suburban areas as well. We have a mental health care massive capacity shortage in the state. And so when I look at 2800 and the really excellent testimony against it, I don't take that for granted at all. I think the issues that were raised are real issues. I think the concerns that were raised are real concerns. And in the last analysis, I think we have to, in my opinion, based on that, I'm choosing to err on the side of, yeah, it's imperfect, but we need to move forward and start addressing this lack of capacity or this lack of capacity that we have in mental health care in the state. So I'm going to be an eye on it.
Thank you, Representative. Other comments on the Dash 2s? Any objections to the Dash 2s? Seeing none, we now have an amended 2800 with the Dash 2s. So, motion for
approval. Yeah, Madam Chair, I would move the House Bill 2800 as amended to the full health care committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. So now we have a motion to move House Bill 2800 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Representative Flores?
Thank you, Chair Kotek. First, I'd like to thank you for helping steer this conversation to a place where we do have the dash twos to consider in this bill. And I do think the conversations did bring us a long way to and ground covered by both sides of the discussion. I think that in the grand scope of things, that this is going to pertain to a very lesser number than allowing every psychologist in the universe to have this prescriptive authority. But I do think it meets a very important need for those that will endeavor to receive this type of education, training, and certification, and to meet needs that are very seriously short in this state. So I'm going to be supporting this bill. I think that it has come a long way. I know that there's a lot of very serious angst by our friends in the psychiatry field, and I hope that we can continue to build bridges and partner. So thank you for your good work in this as well.
Thank you, Representative. And I want to thank everybody who worked on both sides of this. I think there were strong arguments all the way around, the members who worked on the work group. I'm erring on the side of anytime you expand prescriptive authority, there's concerns. We've seen it with different fields. And I also agree, I don't think this is going to be a huge population of psychologists wanting to do this, but I think we have to put this forward because I think there's been a lot of give on the psychologist side. There are a lot of hoops to get through, and as there should be. And it's going to be up to us to keep an eye on it. This is a big step in some ways, and you know the board has a lot of work ahead of them. This bill is not anywhere near done. We've got a Ways and Means issue as well. So, but I do think it's a solid bill at this point. So, would entertain a roll call for the vote, Aaron? Thank you.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Monish.
No.
Vice Chair
Burley.
Aye.
Chair
Aye. And with that, we will move House Bill 2800 on to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Thank you very much. We'll close. Representative Flores, would you like to carry it?
Yes, ma'am. Thank
Excellent.
You.
Excellent. Thank you. And with that, we'll close the work session on 2800. I'd like to open a works public hearing on House Bill 3100. Ray, can you explain the bill for us?
Thank you, Chair. This particular bill, House Bill 3100, does exempt health centers that serve medically underserved individuals and those in rural areas, as well as federally qualified health centers, FQHCs, from professional corporation requirements. Also allows nonprofit corporations to employ health professionals if the nonprofit corp serves medically underserved individuals, serves those in rural areas, or is an FQHC. You do have as well in front of you or in your packet the Dash 1 amendments. Basically, the Dash 1 amendments do delete the section that allows nonprofit corporations to employ health professionals. I think it's actually Section 2 of the bill there. So. We do have one of the proponents of it here with us today, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate that. Mr. Riggs, you're up. And then the other person I have set to testify is Andy.
Who's
up? Okay. Well, we'll start with you, Doug. So. And this is the first time we're hearing this, right? Okay.
So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Doug Riggs, the NGRC. Happy to be here today. I think I've got a relatively easy bill. This is a technical fix of a statute enacted in Oregon in 1947, and it would allow and ensure the continued ability of community health centers to directly employ physicians. Legal analysis provided by the Legislative Council, which is attached to my testimony, has indicated that this is indeed a problem, and Legislative Council recommended amendments to address the issue that are included in Section 1 of 3100. We've also had independent legal analysis prepared both by our legal counsel at OPCA, Nicola Pinson, who is unable to be here today. She's under the weather. And also by independent attorneys who confirm that this is indeed a concern. For a little background, this particular provision is known as the corporate practice of medicine prohibition, and it originates in Oregon case law from the late 1940s. And it prohibits corporations from directly employing licensed health professionals. The intent of the legislation was to protect the independence of medical judgments from the profit interests of corporations. However, its application to community health centers operating without profit and under federal mandate to serve Oregon's vulnerable populations really makes very little sense. In particular, health centers operate under federal grant and legal requirements that strongly encourage the direct employment of healthcare professionals. And contrary to state law, could impair the ability of Oregon communities to successfully access federal grants that pay for a portion of the cost to serve uninsured patients, as well as health centers' abilities to maximize their limited resources to serve populations who face multiple barriers to care, including homelessness, language and cultural barriers, geographic isolation, mental illness, lack of insurance, and other barriers. As recommended in LC's analysis, Section 1 of House Bill 3100 proposes an amendment to exempt community health centers from the requirements of the professional corporation statutes, which would clarify the ability of community health centers as nonprofit organizations governed by community and patient-based boards to continue to employ physicians directly. Section 2 of the bill, as introduced, would have broadened the application to apply to other health professions, but based on conversations with the Hospital Association and others, we determined that it's not directly necessary to ensure the continuing operation of FQHCs and decided to have an amendment, which you have in front of you, the Dash 1 amendments, which would remove Section 2. One word of note, in 2003, the legislature passed a very similar statute that exempted dental organizations run by FQHCs from the same restrictions. At the time, we decided to focus solely on the dental portions of the statute, and this year we're coming back and saying that updating the statute to apply to all the medical professions that are included within FQHCs is an appropriate modification to a statute that is 60 years old this year. So I've attached the Legislative Council's letter for your reference. I won't read it, but it's pretty clear that they do believe that we have a problem. And our clinics serve approximately 250,000 Oregonians a year, and we want to make sure that we continue to provide that number and more with adequate, effective, and efficient health care. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Questions? I know we're all reading furiously.
Chair, if you'd like a brief comment.
Yes, Representative.
Okay. Let me just talk about the history of those laws, where they came from. And there was a rash of them. I think in virtually every state in the union, although Texas was the first one to do it. What was happening before World War II? You can imagine it was just fee-for-service medicine, and there was old Doc on the corner that went to. I remember old Doc I went through. They had my tonsils out down on the storefront there. And what was happening about that time is there was some ferment in the country to change the way medical care was organized. There was, for example, the Elk City Cooperative in Oklahoma that caused Oklahoma to go into a complete uproar, ban of physicians from the medical society. It went to the Supreme Court because he worked for this Elk City Co-op. Supreme Court said they couldn't do that, so they said okay, and they disbanded the Oklahoma State Medical Society and reformed the next day without this doctor. I mean, that's the kind of ferment that was going on around the country. In the Northwest, there was concern about the consumer co-op that was starting in Seattle, which eventually became a very large healthcare system, but it was here a consumer co-op hiring physicians. So these laws all came about at that time to stop this kind of formation. Kaiser Permanente eventually organized around this kind of law by having the medical group, a partnership independent of the health plan and the hospital. So even to this day, the health plan and the hospitals contract with this independent medical group, now a professional corporation. So, I mean, they were there and they're kind of antiquated, and I think nobody, I don't know why we just don't repeal the thing, because nobody really thinks they make any sense anymore. And, but instead we go after kind of one exemption at a time. It's, we're in this time warp, and that's what this one is about.
Madam Chair, Representative Greenlick, I'll note in the Legislative Council letter on the second page that they point out two states in particular which have had the same issue, and that's Michigan and Nevada. And they note that a number of other states on top of those two states have faced the same very same type of situation that we're talking about. And Section 2 would have expanded the bill a little bit further, but we like to be collaborative, and we wanted to make sure that we didn't create any unintended problems for other health professions, so we're happy to take Section 2 out and approach this. And part of this is that we are covered by specific federal statutes that require that we have some sort of professional management and nonprofit status and a board of directors that's both patient and consumer oriented. And so we have a specific set of issues that makes it more difficult for us to comply with the Oregon law than it would be for some other organizations.
Thank you. And thank you, Representative Greenlick, for the background. I guess I'm so can you not currently hire physicians directly?
Now, this
I'm
is
trying
a
to figure out what
area.
This actually means on the ground for you. I mean, I'm not. I'm just trying to understand what this is.
Technically, a direct reading of the law, as Legislative Council points out, would suggest that we may at some point be challenged on this issue.
Yeah.
And so what we were trying to do is anticipate and inoculate ourselves from some future potential issue. It has been raised in the past with dental issues. In fact, it was raised in one particular case a number of years ago, and that's what prompted the legislation in 2003. And so that raised our antenna up, and we wanted to make sure that we cover the bases as far as looking forward. We're not currently being challenged, but a strict reading of the law, according to Legislative Council, indicates that we might have some problems.
Might have trouble. Thank you. I appreciate that clarification. Other questions for Mr. Riggs? See any. Andy, do you want to come up and make a comment? Thank you. Thank you, Doug.
Chair Kotek and members of the committee, I'm Andy Easton with the Oregon Hospital Association. And we just want to say thank you to the Oregon Primary Care Association for listening to us about our issues and our concerns, and for the Dash 1 amendments, which alleviates those concerns.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Yeah, I have
Representative?
Many hospitals hire, say, physician medical directors or directors of quality. How do they do that under this statute? Or is this one of those things that you ignore the same way? I mean, or do you not literally hire them?
Chair Kotek, Representative Green, like, I do not know the answer to that, but I will get back to you on that.
It's just a kind of curiosity because I was thinking about it as we...
Mm-hmm. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is truly one where you have to read between the lines and get the explanation, because from looking at the bill, you wouldn't have a clue that it was doing what you say it's going to do. Could it be, Representative Greenlick, that in places where they do directly hire, it's because they meet the requirements of the statute by having physicians on their board?
Is that all it requires from the statute? I thought it requires that the organization be eligible to be licensed.
Madam Chair, Representative Bonamici, Representative Greenlick, members of the committee, one very interesting point that the Legislative Council letter makes is there is a difference between a government entity and a private nonprofit. And so, for instance, Oregon Health Sciences University, as they point out on the last paragraph on page 1 of their letter, would not run afoul of these laws. But private nonprofit entities such as community health centers, which have specific boards, and we have boards, I don't think any...
Legacy.
Could be. But I don't think any of our boards are made up of a majority of physicians. Mm-hmm. And that may be one of the issues. I seem to remember someplace in the library talking about the majority.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Doug. Thank you. Any other questions? Anyone else interested in testifying on House Bill 3100? If anyone, thank you so much. We'll close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 3100. I would entertain the Dash 1s.
Madam Chair, I would move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3100.
Thank you, Representative Bruhn. The Dash 1 amendments have been moved to House Bill 3100. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so moved. Representative Bruhn?
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 3100 as amended to the full health care committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. So House Bill 3100 as amended has, the motion is to move it to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any more discussion? Seeing none, Aaron, would you call the roll?
Aye.
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 Aye. With that, we will move the bill on to the full committee. Representative Bonamici, would you mind carrying this?
I would be pleased to.
Thank you so much. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3100. We're cruising right along. Next, we'll open a work session on House Bill 3093. Rick, where are we?
Thank you, Chair. 3093, you've heard a couple times before. This would require the Department of Human Services to adopt the Bill of Rights for residents and patients of long-term care facilities, establish that rights be adopted in addition to current rights under statute. It did indicate three areas of rights, care for trained staff specific to disease or medical condition, assistance in administering medication when the facility has agreed to provide medical management, and then provide rights that are modified or special diets. You also have then in your packet the Dash 1 amendments, which would in essence delete lines 16 through 19 of the bill, which is in essence the if the long-term care facility has agreed to provide a resident or patient with medical management assistance, the resident or patient shall have the right to obtain assistance. It would eliminate basically Section 2, 1, sub B. And I understand there's a letter from the Parkinson's people, and in an earlier conversation with the Oregon Healthcare Association, there's concurrence with the Dash 1 amendments and support of the bill.
Thank you, Rick. So what happened after our last meeting is the Healthcare Association and the Parkinson's advocates got back together, and what we have is an agreed-upon compromise. For the record, Ozzy, did you want to make any comment? Okay. Thank you very much. So the Healthcare Association is more comfortable with the changes made in the Dash 1s, and they couldn't be here today. They had another meeting. And then, like Rick said, we have a letter from Holly Chamoff regarding the position from the Parkinson folks. And also, I wanted to note for the record, I did get an email, and I think we might have all received this, to follow up from the previous hearing about the number of residents that are being tracked by the Medicaid data set who have Parkinson's in long-term care facilities. Currently, there are 143 residents in Oregon nursing homes with a diagnosis of Parkinson's. There's also an additional 600 or so in assisted living, residential care, and adult foster homes. Now, this bill would only be applying to the skilled nursing homes, but I just wanted to make note of that for the record.
Manager.
Yes, Representative Gelser.
I would move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3093.
Thank you so much. Representative Gelser has moved the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3093. And like Rick said, it essentially takes off the section sub B on the medication. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, any objections? So moved. So we now have the Dash 1s on the bill. Representative Gelser?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'd move House Bill 3093 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. House Bill 3093, as amended, has the recommendation is to move it to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, Aaron, please call the roll. Thank you.
Representative
Flores.
Aye.
Representative Gelser. Aye.
Aye.
Vice Chair Burns.
Aye.
Aye. And with that, the 3093 as amended will move on to the full committee. Representative Gelser, would you carry? Thank you very much, and thank you all for working on that bill. It's a good start on an important issue. We'll close the work session on 3093. And we are waiting
representatives? Do you want to handle it?
I'll be happy to handle it and save Bruce.
Maybe we could. Well, he might be in the room, but
if I could talk long enough.
All right.
I hope not, actually.
You can.
You don't have to.
this is a bill.
We'll actually open a public hearing on House Bill 2590. That's the last item. And for those of you who might have missed the opening, we're not going to be considering, we're not doing 3087 today. So this is our last one. House Bill 2590. And Representative Greenlee, did you want to make some comments on it?
Yeah, this is a bill that I've been working with DHS and the governor's staff particularly for two sessions now. Originally, and the problem is this, there are substance abuse issues that cross many, many agencies. We think of DHS, with its responsibility for managing substance abuse treatment programs, as a key place, but in fact, the Department of Education has a problem. We've seen headline stories about high school kids using and selling drugs, chilling stories in the paper as recently as this morning. Bowie has issues with things. We have a bill on the floor that deals with whether a company that uses urine analysis can fire somebody with a Medicare card. I mean, these are all examples. Certainly, corrections has enormous issues because something like 25% to 40% of the inmates in our prisons have substance abuse-related issues in their background, many of them the cause of what has them in prison. And it was suggested to me by some people in the field, and it made sense to me, that we needed to find some way to coordinate. Oh, the state police on interdiction, the National Guard. There's just so many different parts of the system that deal with substance abuse, and there wasn't any real way to get them together, to get them to talk to each other. When I first suggested this, the governor's staff responded that, well, that isn't the way we organize the staff. This was 2 years ago, and I said, yeah, I thought that was probably true. If it was the way you organized, I wouldn't have had the suggestion. And what happened this time is I got a very different reception when we introduced it and began to talk particularly to the governor's staff on it. And they very quickly came to a proposal that they would create a position like this on the governor's staff. And in this case, it turned out jointly funded, at least for the first year, by DHS and Department of Corrections. And they will put a person on the governor's staff, jointly funded by them, working with them to try and find ways to coordinate, to find where the areas are, to coordinate among the different agencies, to try and reduce this tsunami we have of substance abuse problems in this state. And the example of methamphetamine work we did in the last session was really very helpful, and the meth task force was a piece of it, but it's much larger than that. So with their promise that they'll put a staff person on as soon as they can hire somebody that's well qualified and supported for a year, and then report back both to the governor's staff and to us on how it worked and what needs to go further, seemed to me to be a very responsible response to this, and one we don't need new legislation about. So I agreed that we ought to go ahead with that until we pull the bill. And Dr. Goldberg was going to be here to talk about it at 4:15.
Well, he might still
and
make it.
If we kill another 10 minutes, we can do that. But if not, he'll be happy to find we're gone and the bill gone.
Representative, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Representative, Mr. Chair. I'm used to saying that.
Well, it's a question.
Representative Greenlee, thank you so much for including prevention in here. That's it's something that's so important that we talk so much about treatment, which is incredibly important, but so is prevention. So I just want to thank you for including that.
Well, I have to echo Representative Bonamici, because having watched, particularly around the funding issues, not only A&D, but mental health, it would be good to have some kind of coordination that crosses the various agencies. We have a lot of needs there, and there are a lot of different funding sources, and it would be nice to have some coordination in the executive branch on that. Representative Broome.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate confirmation or just purely the
this
governor's
one,
discretion?
Well, this is basically a governor's staff position to try and coordinate among executive agencies.
Okay.
What comes out of this, we'll see what,
okay.
what it is.
Can I continue on?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And from your sort of understanding in your conversation with the governor's office, no set of no background requirement for this position, i.e. no law enforcement background, no judicial background?
Well, in fact, one of the things you're worried about is making sure they get somebody that's qualified, that understands something about the field.
Okay.
And that's why they say it may take a couple of months or more to get it going.
And then a final
trip. Yeah,
just an aesthetic thing, and I may be the only one on the committee that sees it this way. When I first saw the term drug policy coordinator, I'm thinking more in line of somebody that's buying the prescription drugs in bulk for the state or something like that. It doesn't have any teeth in it.
Should be substance abuse.
Maybe substance abuse, or, I mean, we always joke about drug czar, but something that we know is intended to hit illegal use, not something to manage the legal use of pharmaceuticals. But that might just be me, Mr. Chair.
No, I think you're right. I think that's a good point. We purposely didn't use drug czar because drug czar, as used in the federal government, has a department under it and a lot of resources. The DEA reports to the drug czar, for example, and there are other whole administrative departments. We weren't trying to begin with that. And in fact, the model that I had in mind when I first started was I was impressed with the way we went after Homeland Security in the very first run, where we had basically a staff person and a council that had key leaders in the different departments that could get together and try and coordinate. So the public health officer was involved. The National Guard was involved, a whole group was involved, but we didn't start a new department. Now, before I had a chance to deal with that, we now have a new department, but that's a different question.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're
welcome.
Represent Forrest, yes.
Representative Greenlick, so as I understand this, as a result of conversations around the concept for this bill, the governor's office is going to go forward with this type of concept without this need for the legislation. Is that correct?
That's right.
Well, I just think that's phenomenal, and I have a list of about 3,500 other bills that he might want to consider. We've all had discussions about the concepts of bills that will do very good things, and it is my firm opinion that we can get there if we would have conversations instead of legislating. So thank you very much for at least being very upfront about that.
The difference between a bill and getting it done is a fiscal. One of the things, the reason it's still here is because they weren't sure they could get the resources, and they wanted to make sure that a bill was here and we could ask for fiscal if needed, but they came up with the money out of their own budgets.
Yay. And sometimes we need legislation, too.
Well, that's for the other 575 bills that would remain after we peeled out 3,500.
There you go.
Other
is this a work session?
This is a public hearing, and
but not a...
The bill's not going anywhere. We're just getting an update, and you might be able to catch Dr. Goldberg before he goes much further, since he's on his way, I'm sure. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2590, and colleagues, we'll see each other on Friday, and we're adjourned.